It's 4:44 on a Tuesday downtown. It's time for a message in the bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan is in the house with us. Good day, sir.
Good day. And it's beverage hour here.
It is.
Cutler and I are going to have words. He can't be bringing in hard alcohol before I'm going to be bringing in beautiful Cabernet. I mean, he can.
He did.
I guess I'm just upset that there's none left for me. I guess that's really... I have no problem with Bob or bourbon, and I like both of them. I'll just have to walk up the street, I guess.
Frankly, I find one makes the other more tolerable.
Indeed, indeed. We'll leave you to figure out which. Cool. So, man, big day. Start of the World Series. I'm actually excited.
Yeah.
I think I'm more excited because the Yankees are not part of it. I'm almost excited because no one regionally is part of it, but really good teams are in it, and I'll actually watch.
Fun teams.
Yeah, like fun teams, and teams that kind of like, you know, they had stories, and the Dodgers all of a sudden stopped winning, and then they started winning, and, you know, Houston made all the right moves, and
yeah,
this and that. It's compelling television, except it's not compelling television. I wish I was there, but I don't have that kind of money. I think my favorite topic of sports shows is like, how do we speed up baseball?
No.
Make it one inning. And I don't even think that would work.
No.
I don't know. Cool. But yeah, so as we mentioned, we're going back to the Northwest. As you recall, last week, the bottle that we have in front of us today did not make it in time for my trip over to the ZON land. And so we jumped to what would have been this week's topic, which was going back East Coast, the Mid-Atlantic Coast. So we're back. We're exploring Washington State today. Washington State makes fantastic wines. I think for Americans who really are kind of graduating from the big fruit bombs and the overladen, ripe, high alcohol wines of other places, not just the U.S., but other places in our neck of the woods. South America makes a lot of big wines like that. But Washington has a really, really interesting sort of moderating climate, self-moderating climate that makes it a little bit more old world in terms of the ripeness and the levels of the grapes and things like that. And subsequently, there's been a lot of European interest in Washington. We'll get to that in a bit. So Washington State is the U.S.'s second biggest wine producer, but it is dwarfed by California. It doesn't even produce 10% of what California produces in terms of wine. Oh, and by the way, just really quick update. I've had a lot of people ask, which is cool that people care. Quick update on those fires. So things are getting back to normal. And in fact, as happens, I'm sure, in any disaster area, the tourism industry is very, very hungry for people to come back and realize that all the cities are not on fire. And for those worried about the supplies, basically most of the reports coming in are that most of the grapes are safe. Most of the juice is safe. There are exceptions. And for those people, we are very sorry, and we hope you rebuild. The only grapes that really were still on the vines were some late ripening Cabernet, you know, high altitude Cabernet sites. And yeah, it might be a smoky vintage. And sometimes that's nice, and sometimes it's overwhelming and it's unsellable. So we'll see what transpires there, but by and large, folks, the California wine country is safe for now. Of course, it was funny. I was chatting with a gentleman who lived in California for much of his life, and he was laughing about how they would see fires regularly. I mean, it was just a thing. But then there was the one day the hospital caught on fire because an ember from, you know, 100 so far away, it lit it on. So a very interesting sort of state of being, I would think, living where there's sort of perpetual fire.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm more than happy to, I guess, to live in a place where the air hurts my face for a couple months out of the year, because I can dig out of snow. Back to Washington. So Washington, this has nothing to do with the popular parts of Washington necessarily, the Seattles and things like that, which have lush greenery and all that sort of, they're, you know, part of that lovely reach towards the Alaska and Vancouver and everything. But most of Washington State is desert. It is very, very brutal. Summer days, 17-hour summer days. And then in the winter, you get brutal Arctic winds, which can actually freeze vines, but Conversely, it's really bad for things like the phylloxera louse. So they don't have a lot of problems with rootstock issues. Yeah. They don't have a lot of problems with bugs. They don't have a lot of, there's a lot of opportunity for organic and biodynamic agriculture because it's safe and it's dry and it's so it's kind of, you know, you get what you get and you take what you take. One company, however, and that's the Columbia Crest family, controls 2/3 of the production it requires, but everybody else basically buys fruit. It is a land of vineyards that are owned by people that aren't necessarily the wineries, which is actually really cool because you get a lot of opportunities, like the wine we're having today, to sort of pick and choose who you're going to because of their farming practices and the styles of their vineyards. And maybe they're a high altitude, super minerally style vineyard, and you get that kind of fruit from there. And then maybe you get some fruit from a more sort of lush, loamy area and things like that. And so you get this variety of fruit that you can then go play with in your cellar. And so that's a pretty big thing, and it's kind of cool. Because it kind of, you know, California was a little earlier into this whole wine thing. The land wasn't that expensive, but I think a lot of the land in Washington State now, because of the viability of the wine industry, the vineyards are very expensive. They were very expensive very quickly, and so it was hard for, you know, nascent viticulturalists to kind of get into it. There are the biggest appellation. So we've talked about the American viticultural areas, right? And what that basically means is it's a delimited area, but it doesn't mean that there's rules and regulations on what can be planted there or how long it has to be aged in new oak or anything like that. It's just a piece of land. So the Columbia Valley AVA, which is the AVA that we're going to be sampling today, I suppose, as it were, is the biggest, and it's also the oldest AVA there. But there are better, smaller places. Horsehaven Hills is a pretty famous one. We carry a nice Merlot from Columbia Crest from there, and that runs just north of the Columbia River. And the vineyards rise up on these southwest facing slopes that look over the river, and they're just absolutely optimal in terms of you know what you want for grape growing. Excuse me. And then other, you know, noteworthy ones are they're kind of clustered northeast the city of Yakima, and these are some of the Washington's warmest vineyards. There's the Wauluka Slope, which has really, really interesting warmer weather. Like, they grow great Syrah. So that's the kind of, and really good old world Syrah. So I love that sort of stuff. Like Milbrandt Vineyards, for instance, they make killer Syrah, but most of it, again, as I was sort of talking about, they sell off. And then southeast, Rattlesnake Hills, there's the Red Mountain AVA where, and I was talking about European investment, so the Marchese Antonori of Tuscan fame has a joint venture there with Chateau Saint-Michel. And then Walla Walla, which is also super fun to say, the easternmost viticultural area in Washington, and spills over into Oregon, and that's a very warm summer, chilly winter place, and I think it's really growing some fascinating grapes that are then turned into fascinating wines by daring young winemakers. So the wine we're doing today is kind of interesting because it grows out of Oregon. The King Estate and the King family, who make fabulous Willamette Valley Pinot Noirs, Pinot Gris, we work with their Pinot Gris in the store. They started this venture called North by Northwest in Washington to really bring out the what I think is sort of their old world aesthetic. They do a nice red blend. They do some whites. What we're drinking today is their Cabernet Sauvignon from 2013. Really nice, velvety, concentrated fruit. Just absolutely gorgeous. Not super expensive either. A lot of the best cabs for sort of everyday usage, it's going to sound a little expensive, but like they're $25-ish. And that is a pretty solid price for a really nice cab. If these were out of somewhere more famous or where they needed to get more money, you could easily pay $40-$50 for these cabs. Absolutely just divine, dark fruit, little smoky, really nice. So that's Washington. It's sort of in a heartbeat. But I encourage you to check out the wines from there, whites, reds. Again, you may need to ask your favorite wine merchant, because there's sort of one big controlling winery operation, which is fine. They make really good wines. But then if you're looking for some of the more off the beaten path things, definitely check in.
This is very nice. A lot of character in this.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, it's not an inexpensive wine, but I mean, I think it's a really, it definitely holds its own with better cabs. That's why I was really excited to try it. And yeah, I knew the King family. I mean, they make, as I said, they make absolutely wonderful wine. If you also knew, I think the Acrobat wines, that's their entry level Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir, which we just had actually at the Uncorked event that we did this weekend. Which was fun. Speaking of events, before I run out of time, I did want to remind people that in early November, we've got Harvest Fest at the Cross Center coming up, and we will be there taking pre-orders and talking with people about what we do. And then I am also on Sunday, if you're going to be at the Harvest Fest, going to be doing a presentation at 1 o'clock on selecting wine like a pro. So if you want to get further edumacated, come on in and try some wine. And I hear I've never even been to the Harvest Fest because I'm usually working. But I wanted to make it a point this year to get involved, and a lot of people said we'd be perfect for it, so I'm excited about that.
That's fantastic.
And as the holiday season approaches, folks, definitely keep your eye out on Facebook and website and other forms of social media, because we're going to be having a lot of fun events. Of course, our regular tastings. We have another awesome Women in Wine event coming up in early December as well, which more details to come, but some absolutely killer juice is going to be poured there. So,
Bangor Uncorked went well.
It went well. It's always, I'm always paranoid, because when you're behind the scenes, you see like every little thing that you know is wrong, but no one knows it's wrong. It's like this radio show. I mean, if people were in here right now looking at the absolute chaos, and they'd be like, how are they putting something on the air?
Or you thought California was on fire.
My goodness.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. And, also we had, the fundraiser for on Thursday, the Bangor Symphony, and then the symphony orchestra itself really slammed it home with their concert on Sunday. Some spooky music performed extraordinarily well, and the pianist, I swear, it looked like a taller version of David Hasselhoff, and it was fantastic. Jowls flying, keys flying,
like
good
it.
Stuff. Get tickets to the BSO if you haven't, because you're missing a treat. And then next week we'll be talking about, we're going to cram in South America and the Southern Hemisphere so that in December we can just talk about holiday favorites and things like that. So we're going to do all sorts of stuff.
Thank you.
We'll see you here next week.
It's Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Stop in and say hello to him right on Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday here on the program.